At least two animals now in Wisconsin have contracted the West Nile virus. The mosquito-borne disease is transmissible to humans, but even if you do contract it, you're unlikely to develop symptoms. Rebecca Osborne's a vector-borne disease epidemiologist at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. And Rebecca, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
How dangerous is the West Nile to humans?
Well, like you mentioned, the large majority of people that are infected with the virus will probably not even realize that they've been infected because it often doesn't cause any symptoms. But for about one in every 150 people that becomes infected will go on to develop what we call West Nile encephalitis or severe disease and might end up in the hospital. So it can be very serious in a certain proportion of people.
What about our pets, Rebecca?
Yeah, good question. So the animals that are most affected by West Nile virus include horses. So people who do own horses are probably familiar with a vaccine that's available to prevent West Nile virus disease in their horses. Otherwise, it generally infects wild birds, which is how the virus ends up being transmitted to mosquitoes in the first place.
Can it only be transmitted from mosquitoes? I mean, could there be an infected animal transmitting it to another animal or even, say, a human?
So it's only a spread from birds to mosquitoes.
Okay.
So that's how mosquitoes become infected in the first place. That mosquito could then go on to bite a person or a horse, for example, and make that animal sick. But a person who gets West Nile virus can't do a very good job of infecting a mosquito. So really it's the birds that are giving the virus to the mosquitoes, and that mosquito might go on and bite someone else, like a horse or a human.
Rebecca Osborne joining us from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, a vector-borne disease epidemiologist. And I feel like it hasn't been a really bad mosquito season, at least here in South Central Wisconsin. And I also feel like, well, fall's encroaching on us, and maybe mosquito season is in our back rearview mirror. As a vector-borne disease epidemiologist, how do you see the news of West Nile virus found in two animals in Wisconsin?
Yeah, this is the time of year when people sort of have their sights set on fall.
Right.
School is starting, you know, the weather's sort of hinting at a change, but this is still sort of peak West Nile virus season through the end of the month, generally depending on weather. So really August and September are the time of the year when we see the most number of West Nile virus cases in both animals and people.
Huh.
It's been a quiet year so far, right? We just had a couple animals that have been reported, but we know it's out there. We know it's in the mosquitoes. Probably some people are being exposed that may not be getting sick, but unfortunately it's probably just a matter of time before we start seeing a few human cases pop up.
Do we know?
So
do we know
continue
why?
To think about it until it's sort of a really cold frost, and then we can forget about mosquitoes for the year.
All right. So the frost is what we're waiting for. But why is the risk of getting this West Nile virus the highest at the end of summer, Rebecca?
Yeah, so that's a great question with a really complex answer. But there's a lot of different things that can affect how risky it is to get West Nile virus. But one of the main things that can contribute to risk in people is a really high temperature. This can affect how quickly the virus replicates or sort of becomes transmissible in the mosquito. And it can even, change the mosquito's behavior and how often they take blood meals or bite a person. So August and September, on average, are really hot months for Wisconsin. And even in the end of July. So that really is affecting the number of infected mosquitoes that are flying around outside. That's why the risk is highest this time of year.
What are you doing to prevent mosquito bites? What can we do to stave off a West Nile virus spread?
Sure. So one of the best things to do is to just think about preventing bites when you go outside. The time that these mosquitoes that spread West Nile virus are most active is at dawn and dusk. So this is going to be the most important times of day to protect yourself. And that would be, wearing a mosquito repellent. My favorite is a product that includes picaridin, which is a kind of EPA or Environmental Protection Agency registered repellent. There's other common ones like DEET, but there are several options that work really well against mosquito bites. The other thing to do is just cover up your skin. So if you can bear it, even if it's really hot, wear sort of long sleeve, loose fitting clothing that can keep the mosquitoes from getting to your skin. And then just again, avoiding those peak biting times at dawn and dusk.
Yeah, I usually use the DEET. So I wanted to ask you again, Rebecca, about the insect repellent that you use. What's it called?
My favorite is called picaridin. It's an active ingredient that's found in a variety of different products.
Thank you.
There are others. You can check on the EPA website if you just look for repellents. They have a great website that has a lot of options that are, again, registered with the Environmental Protection Agency.
Rebecca Osborne from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services taking a look at the West Nile virus, which has been found in two animals in Wisconsin. And what do West Nile virus symptoms look like, Rebecca? In humans who show symptoms, what could we expect?
Yeah, so in a lot of people, it might cause a mild flu-like illness, a flu for a few days. So body aches, chills, fever, headache, muscle pains. And a lot of people will just get that.
We're kind of cutting out there. So just to reiterate here, Rebecca says it would be flu-like symptoms. And if you do have those symptoms, you should consult a physician immediately. And that would be the symptoms to look for. And Rebecca, do we have you back?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. So I was just saying some of the symptoms to look for in humans, it would be like a flu-like symptoms. And what to do if you were to come down with those symptoms, I would imagine wouldn't be different than any other time you'd have those symptoms.
Yeah, certainly contact your healthcare provider if you start to feel really sick and aren't feeling better after a few days. And if you have more serious symptoms like, you know, confusion and memory loss and balance issues, things that are really concerning for the more severe presentation of West Nile virus, certainly call your doctor right away.
But it would, like so many things in our health system, prevention would be the best medicine in this regard.
Absolutely. Yep. So just taking a few steps to prevent bites is excellent, as well as trying to keep standing water away from your home. One other thing to think about, mosquitoes love to breed in water. So tip those containers, you know, clean out your buckets and drains and make sure there's not a lot of standing water around your house.
Well, Rebecca Osborne, you give us a reason to look forward to our first frost.
Yes. That is one reason to look forward to winter is the saying goodbye to mosquitoes.
Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you again.
Rebecca Osborne, vector-borne disease epidemiologist at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, talking with us about what you need to know about the West Nile virus in Wisconsin. Now, it's time for Wisconsin Life, and here's producer Mary Kay McCoy with a story about the healing power of nature.
Sometimes, an ordinary experience surprises us, turning the mundane into something extraordinary. Writer Crystal Chan felt this on a walk she took in her neighborhood with a friend, reminding them of the power of being present and enjoying the moment.
It was supposed to be a typical evening walk. My friend Zach was visiting from Manitowoc, and when I told him about the pond in our Oshkosh neighborhood, he wanted to see it. What I call the pond is a retention pond for an originally low-lying area in our neighborhood. The city created the pond in order to prevent people's basements from flooding. Mallard ducks congregated there in the summer, and as the autumn drew on, the ducks were replaced by geese. Zach and I walked to the pond at dusk. As we rounded the corner to the pond, we heard them. Geese. All spring and summer, I had seen only a couple geese at a time. Now, there were maybe 50, and they were flying, making wide circles around the pond, honk-talking to each other as they flew. As the last of the sky's color faded into night, the geese continued to make wide, low circles, honking, flapping powerfully, mere feet over our heads. I thought that the geese were just going to circle low to the ground, and that would have been magic enough. But as night settled in full, we heard more honking far in the distance. More geese were coming. Zach and I watched on silently. The original flock of 50 geese were still circling above us. Then a single goose silently landed on the water and cried out, honking to the others. "Maybe that one is a scout," Zach whispered. And sure enough, within moments, the 50 bodies of muscle and wing skidded onto the surface of the water. Moments later, the second wave of honking was above us, another dark flock. The geese, already on the water, cried back in a cacophony of noise until the flying group also skid-landed on the surface. After that, a third flock circled in, honking, more skid-landing. 150 geese then 200 of them. Only a thin strip of light shone from a parking lot lamp, a sliver of visibility. And in this sliver, we saw a density of powerful bodies on the pond. Beyond this thin sliver of illumination, darkness. But we knew that it was not just darkness. We knew there were hundreds of wild animals mere yards away. The power of their presence was tangible. It is not unsurprising that our experience rendered itself as utmost holiness in this COVID world. These days, presence is fleeting. We have all been presence starved. You can't see this inner starvation, but it's there. As the night grew thick, I couldn't see Zach a couple feet away from me, but I could feel his presence. Just as I couldn't see the 200 powerful bodies upon the pond, but I could feel their presence. It was a visceral, primal sensing of presence, one that surpassed any Zoom meeting, one that fed the heart and spirit. At some point, the geese grew quiet and there was silence. In the thick darkness, Zach and I couldn't see them at all. But the power of their presence was overwhelming and palpable in the silence of that night. And in some deep and indescribable way, it healed a hungry, hidden part of us.
Writer Crystal Chan brought you that story about the healing power of nature. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org. I'm Mary Kate McCoy.